This is Today in Money. I'm Jim Goddard. My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Bob, welcome back to Today in Money.
Yeah, well, very good to be with you on a lovely Friday morning in Vancouver and with our audience. And as you know, I can never ever tell where the audience is, but they're out there.
In Cyberland.
Oh, I like that one, Jim. Yeah.
I remember the police would tell us, oh, it was a gangland shooting, and we always said, where's gangland? And if you can tell us, we'd like to avoid it.
Yeah, we are.
Yes, we love to kick off the show with listener questions. We have a question from Michael. Hello, Bob and Jim. Record margin debt, the Buffett indicator, and Shiller PE ratio are both exploding. Rising long bond rates, rising oil, war, disrupted supply chains, inflation extinguishing the purchasing power of the middle class, AI data centers consuming unsustainable amounts of electricity and water, job creation crashing, housing bust underway, a bursting private credit market with private equity in free fall, and socialist candidates waiting to replace capitalism with fascism. And yet, the market grinds higher. Bob, I'm confused. Is this really an economy for the top 10% with the Fed and other central banks ever increasing the money supply so as to push up asset prices and inflate the debt away, all while Main Street loses its purchasing power? How much longer can this short-sighted market keep everyone invested long rather than short?
Yeah, that's a good one. Actually, as our theme has been all since around March, that it was shaping up to be another great financial bubble. And this would make it number 6. And for perspective, and number 5 was in 1929. So in New York in 1929, the market peaked on September 3rd, drifted around, and then, as everybody knows, crashed. 1873 was another great financial bubble, and in New York, the market went up into September, and then crashed badly. And the other thing we'll add, Jim, is that if there is going to be a financial disaster, it will be typically found in the fall, like October, maybe into November. And that's just the way it goes. I've wondered for decades, I've wondered why, but all you can do is say that's the way it works. So that's a very well-written question. And the idea of inflating the problems away, you had a reckless central bank with the Federal Reserve in 1929. In the 1960s, econometricians said that the reason why you had the depression was because the Fed was too tight in the fall of 29. And I've got evidence that says no, the Fed was trying to provide liquidity. And then in January 1930, a Fed governor said that we met the crisis with the standard way of providing liquidity, thinking it was all over. And then, of course, what it was at the end of every great financial bubble, you go into a severe, let's call it a Great Depression. And that goes all the way back to the first great financial bubble, the South Sea bubble of 1720. And it was identified as a bubble as it was occurring. And nowadays you got some central bankers saying, oh, well, it's not a bubble. And it is the biggest bubble in history. And also, as some people have pointed out, it's an everything bubble. And that's accurate because in the great financial bubble, everything goes up and then everything comes down. Now, in a normal business cycle, the stock market will peak and then maybe 10, 12 months later, the economy does. And this is why central bankers, the Fed and whatnot, consider the Standard & Poor's 500 as a leading indicator. But they haven't done enough research to know that when you're at the end of a bubble, it's an instantaneous indicator. So here we are, happy with the strength during the summer and hoping that it goes right through into September, and then you start looking for the time when bad things are discovered. And the other thing is that the bigger the bubble, the harder the hit. And there's nothing that central bankers can do about it. So the next few months are going to be very interesting.
And Bob, there's a second question for you from Michael. Michael says, assuming this market does pop, should we stay away from gold miners, silver, and other commodities until the equity markets have reasonably bottomed? I would also think that the Russell, small caps, and foreign markets would suffer more than the main U.S. indices.
Oh, yeah, right on, yeah. Yeah, what you get in as a feature of a great bubble is that when it breaks, gold's real price goes up, which is very good for gold miners because the real price reflects profitability. We prefer to do gold divided by commodities, assuming that the commodities, CRB, is a proxy for costs. So there's much more to gold than estimating the price in U.S. dollars. It's profitability of the gold miners that counts. So we're going into a period in previous post-bubble depressions. The gold miners have done well, but there are times when you're in a serious bear market for all stocks, the gold stocks and silver stocks will get hit. There's just no way around it. So, so this is what's likely. And then we also think that the Russell small caps and foreign markets would suffer more than the main. Yeah, that's right. So, so the small stuff can just disappear, and along with things like junk bonds, which are highly risky, but they have been very popular because there is no risk concept out there. But junk can crash, and a whole lot of it just goes to zero because they go bankrupt. And then behind that, the other problem with maybe investment-grade bonds now running into problems and becoming junk. So there's going to be an oversupply of junk. But that's a good question, and thanks for it.
And Michael has a final question. Can gold and the U.S. dollar both rise during a market crash and flight to safety?
Yes. The pattern for the senior currency is that it becomes, and I love using the term, chronically firm in the post-bubble contraction. And so the U.S. dollar is the senior currency. All this BRIC stuff is just so much nonsense. And what seems to drive it is that, say, in Argentina is a country that really doesn't like U.S. dollar being firm, because they owe it into New York money market. So this is the feature of a post-bubble world, is that all kinds of countries and people and industries are suddenly finding servicing debt into New York is very, very difficult. They have to get their hands on dollars to meet obligations in New York. And that business of people wanting to get dollars, it provides a pretty good bid for the dollars. So, yeah, dollar will likely become, and I love the term, chronically firm. And the Fed will not be able to depreciate its own currency, which is going to be a pleasure to watch.
We'll take a look at some of the headlines that caught Bob's eye right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Always consult your investment professional before making any investment decision. Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Some headlines that caught your eye today from Zero Hedge. The AI bubble's biggest casualty.
Yeah, somebody got hit, and I looked into it. It was just, there was, somebody got hit. So, and there will be many.
Do we know who that somebody is?
I forgot.
Oh. Now, we have another headline here that's rather interesting from Zero Hedge. Full effing FOMO. Stocks ripped to record highs on massive squeeze. Crude crash as Bessent teases imminent deal.
Yeah. FOMO. Capital F, capital O, capital M-O. Fear of missing out. I love it. It's a good one. And this is what is happening. But so you get the retail trade coming in and bidding up stocks. And then also, you've got the professional traders out there who may be short too early. So then they get stops and get covering. So you got that other bid, and it just goes. I'd be happy to see this go, this strength go right into September and get as overbought as it can. And then we know where we are.
From Zero Hedge, futures hit new record high on strong earnings following historic call buying frenzy.
Yep, there's your pros, buying calls. It's happening.
Now, when you're in record high territory, does that mean when the market corrects, it'll be a record low?
Well, yeah, the big low was in June and July of 1932, and from the high in September 1929, that was a dreadful bear market, and some stocks just disappeared. And the averages, following 29, New York was a junior market compared to London. And I think at one point the S&P might have been down 80%. Whereas in London, being the senior market, they only fell in half. But so New York is now the senior market. So the brightest thing out there is to wonder if the S&P might fall in half rather than take the 80% hit. We'll know eventually.
Headline from Breitbart. Breitbart Business Digest. Warsh is right about the costs of too much Fed talk.
Yeah, Warsh, of course, is the new head of the Fed. And what I've seen from him, I think he's a little more practical than previous Fed governors. And to examine, yeah. And then there's a whole industry out there that's interpreting what the Fed says. And it's a whole lot of nonsense because the Fed follows the market. We got a lovely chart, and it shows the T-bill rate going up and down, and then the changes in the Fed funds rate, the changes in the Fed funds rate follow the changes in the T-bill rate, and the T-bill rate is set by a jillion of transactions around the world, and it, no matter where people are trading or not trading or buying things or not buying things, it all feeds into the money market, and particularly the money market in the World Financial Center, which is now New York. Hitherto, London was the World Financial Center, and then prior to that, it was Antwerp. And you go all the way back to when Rome in 200 AD was the financial center of the world. So it changes, and not by government edict, it changes due to market forces. So,
Isn't it correct, Bob, that the international bond market is what really sets interest rates, not the central banks?
Oh, yeah. They're playing a scam, like trying to look in charge. And then when things go wrong, they then lay the blame somewhere else. So they're there claiming that they're responsible for the good stuff, but they're not responsible for the bad stuff. It's been such a scam. Central banking is a scam.
So is President Trump wrong to call on the Fed to lower interest rates if they're not really in charge of interest rates?
Yeah, I have a regard for Trump as a businessman and whatever he's doing now, but he is misinformed on what the result is of the Fed lowering rates. And if you look through the last 700 or 800 years of interest rates, is that short rates, like treasury bills, go up in the boom, and then they go down in the bust. And so rising T-bill rates is confirming that the boom is on. And then when the T-bill rate turns down, it says, watch out. So, the T-bill rate had a modest high a while ago, but it's not breaking down. But we're watching it for the breakdown. And so the worst thing that can happen is for the short rates to go down. And the T-bill rate in the summer of 1929 got as high as 5%. And then in March 1932, it was down to 0.08%. So the idea that good things are going to come by the Fed lowering rates is just plain wrong. It's the worst thing that can happen.
Headline: all greed, no fear, with bonds and stocks bid on cool, CPI surging semis, lowest range day of the year.
Yeah. I love that. All greed, no fear. That really is a good statement.
Now, obviously, here's a person who never grew up on a farm like I did. This is a headline from Breitbart. Democrat Agriculture Secretary nominee says farming isn't that hard. Farmers only work a few days a year.
A few weeks a year.
A few weeks a year. A few days, a few weeks.
Yeah, no, I like that one. No, farming is very hard work. Very hard work.
Yeah, I made the mistake once on the homestead when I was 12, 13 years old. I said to my mom, I'm bored. Well, she got on the chalkboard there in the farm kitchen, and there's probably chores on there I never got to. There's probably about 48, 50 of them.
Yeah.
There's always something to paint, fix, move, shovel, pick,
milk
water. Oh, we didn't have livestock. Even without livestock, there's always something that needs to be done. And also, farmers are the most self-driven people in the world because they're free, you know, entrepreneurs. And there's no one there to bail them out. I mean, if there is a government bailout, it's always too little too late.
Yeah, I would agree.
Although I remember one year my mom said, we made a profit on the farm this year because of the drought. And we got a $5,000 check from the government. we were one of the few farms that didn't have a drought. So we actually had a crop because of smart farming practices that I won't get into. But anyway, also our last headline here from What's Up With That. Another new study links modern and past global warming to natural changes in cloud cover, not CO2.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? The clouds come over and it reflects heat to outer space, and it's not as hot under a cloud as it is if you're getting the direct sunshine on it. Sure. Mm-hmm. And also, the overall cloud cover on the Earth can vary according to cosmic rays that are coming in. So there's been, I'd say in the last 20 years, some incredibly good work done on the mechanism of the solar system driving our climate changes. And the other one that is, it's amazing, Jim, is that these promoters in climate, they're saying that warming is bad. And all you got to do is take a look at the history of life on our very hospitable planet. Into the billions of years now, when the first little microbes and viruses arrived. But the record is that warming is good. And then somewhere about 500 million years ago, everything got really cold, and some writers and researchers have called it that our Earth planet turned into an ice ball. I would prefer to call it a slush ball. But on the last ice age, the tongue of ice got down to where Chicago is now. So put yourself back there 12,000 years ago and look under that tongue of ice sticking down and tell me what kind of ice forms you got under there. Or just go into the mountains, the Rockies, where there are alpine glaciers, where they come out and look under an alpine glacier and you tell me what kind of life forms you got there. So this promotion that warming is bad, it's all designed to tax the people and control the people. And the control freaks don't care what the issue is, so long as they can use it to coerce people, which has been going on. But fortunately, there is a more of a practical movement beginning to sweep the whole Earth, the globe, that really these authoritarian governments are not that good an idea. So there's a major reform building, it's interesting to watch it, Jim.
Bob, always interesting to chat with you.
Jim, I enjoy our week, Fridays together, and let's look forward to next week.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Find us on X at How Street. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening. Comments made on Today in Money are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any manner whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Today in Money is a production of House Street Media Incorporated. Executive producer, Tom Allen.